This weekend starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
When Facebook is fakebook, I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for joining us on this first full weekend in November. Here's what's coming up this hour.
It takes a lot of work and fudging to create a bogus account on a social media site like Facebook. Hear the experience of one journalist.
Midway through the NFL season, who's ready to predict the Saints and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl?
On the tech front, how your smartphone is spying on you right now through various apps.
And from the music world, what's happened to all the pop divas? They're almost nowhere to be found on the charts.
In this rap-dominated landscape, what you're finding is pop stars, and especially female pop stars, are struggling to have huge hits, struggling to top the charts, struggling to put out music that people like.
Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shah on what he calls the pop diva identity crisis. He's here later in the hour. Well, Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, as you know, is investigating the role of Facebook and Twitter in Russia's 2016 presidential disinformation campaign, with execs from both companies testifying before Congress. New laws governing what appears on social media sites seem likely, but first, policymakers must answer some confounding questions, including how prevalent are fake accounts on Facebook in the first place? Yahoo Finance writer Rick Newman tried to set some up. Rick, what did you find?
I didn't just do this on a whim, you know. I wanted to see how hard it is to establish fake accounts on Facebook, because that was a big deal with the Russians, whoever the Russians were who were running ads on Facebook during the U.S. election last year. They ran those ads from something like 500 fake Facebook accounts. We've known that even this year, foreigners have been sort of running imposter accounts, pretending that they're Americans or Americans organizations that they're not. So I just wondered, how easy or hard is it to do this? So I try to do two things, Gordon. First, I try to establish my own fake Facebook account. So I'd come up with a fake name, I'd create an email address, and then try to, you know, add some bogus personal details for these individuals. And that was very hard. Facebook shut me down every time I did that. They obviously have some algorithms that can detect something fishy about an account. I don't know this for a fact, but I think one of the things Facebook was able to detect, which tipped them off, was that I was establishing these accounts with new email addresses that I had just taken out. In other words, this was probably not my real email address. But for whatever reason, they kept stopping me. So that plan A failed, and I went to plan B, which is see if I could buy fake accounts on the internet, because people had told me it's pretty easy to do. So I went looking around. I found four different places that are selling fake Facebook accounts. I bought a total of 26 accounts from four different websites. I spent a total of about $105. And I was able to get 14 of those 26 accounts working. I logged in, and the account was mine. Sometimes it was a middle-aged man. Sometimes it was a young woman.
Okay.
A mix of this and that type of person. So all of a sudden, I had 14 Facebook accounts at my disposal.
Jeez. Did that surprise you?
Yes. It surprised me. I think both parts of that surprised me. It surprised me that it was as hard as it was to start up a fake account, because I thought that would just be pretty easy.
Right, right.
But it surprised me how easy it was to go buy an account online. And I did talk with Facebook about this before we published the story. I included their response to this in the story. And they said, look, we are aware that these sites are out there. Please understand that just because they're saying they have thousands and thousands of Facebook accounts for sale, that does not mean it's true. I did buy some accounts that didn't work. They didn't work because the password was out of date, or the password had been used for a different account or something like that. Nonetheless, more than half of the accounts I purchased actually worked. And I'll tell you one other interesting detail, kind of floored me. Of the 10 or so accounts I bought that didn't work, 8 of them were from a single provider. So I had purchased a pack of 10 accounts from this one provider. Only 2 of them worked, 8 did not work. So I contacted them by email and told them 8 of the accounts didn't work. And within 24 hours, they sent me 8 more accounts.
Wow.
And 6 of those accounts worked. So, you know, customer service was pretty good. And of these 4 sites that were selling Facebook accounts, none of them was an outright scam that just took my money and offered nothing in return.
How about that? Wow. Speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman, he's got an interesting story entitled How the Bad Guys Build Fake Accounts on Facebook. Well, at least you established you're not a good fraud, I guess. But what are the kind of the broader lessons here maybe for you know, the average Facebook user?
Well, I will tell you, since I've been looking into all kinds of these things that are going on social media, not just Facebook, but Twitter, and I think LinkedIn and YouTube also have problems with fake accounts and people who are running accounts that are not who they seem to be. I've become very skeptical of things I see on social media sites.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, interesting. While I was doing the research on this Facebook story we're talking about, I got a friend request from somebody on Facebook who I did not know, and I was kind of thinking, well, why does this person want to be my friend? The photograph was an attractive young woman, as it often is.
Yep.
So there's a trick you can do. You can download the photograph that's in the profile picture, and then you can do a reverse image search. All you have to do is search that on Google. And I found out that the photograph belonged to some actress in Europe or someplace.
Wow,
so
wow.
Somebody just stole the actress's picture and is using it as a profile picture on these accounts, which is a classic hallmark of a fake account.
Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance writer Rick Newman, who's based in New York. It is 13 minutes now after the hour on this weekend. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. If this NFL season has left you mostly confused, you're not alone. Wall Street Journal sports writer Jason Gay says there's no sure shot, no undefeated powerhouse, and a lot of unwatchable mush in the middle. Jason, your take.
What's the great line that the screenwriter William Goldman has about Hollywood? Nobody knows anything. I kind of feel that's the safe stance halfway through this NFL season, Gordon. I mean, we don't have much clarity about anything. Do you feel really good about calling for a Philadelphia Eagles versus the, you know, Kansas City Chiefs or Pittsburgh Steelers Super Bowl? I mean, this feels very wide open to me. This just does not seem to be one of those years where there's just a team that's running away with things.
Is it too soon to call Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson emerging stars in the NFL?
Well, I definitely think you can do that. I think that's fair enough. I mean, Wentz has been terrific for Philadelphia. I mean, they're 7-1 right now. It's really hard to argue with that success. And this is a guy who, you know, has showed a maturity, which I think people did not necessarily anticipate. I mean, this is a second-year player who is showing the kind of leadership that you usually get from a veteran. Same actually goes for Deshaun Watson. This is a guy who sort of seems preternaturally equipped for both the demands of the job but also the leadership role. And in Houston, you look at, you know, the record may not be perfect. Obviously, it's 3-4. Houston had a heartbreaker last week against Seattle, but 19 touchdown passes through 7 games, that's pretty remarkable and actually is tied for the league lead with Wentz.
I know you rarely miss a chance to take a shot at the Jets in your pieces, and you say if they took the rest of the season off, nobody would notice, but I think, to be fair, they've exceeded everybody's expectations by collecting 3 wins.
This is true, right? I mean, they already matched the what Vegas said was the over-under, I think. yes, Gordon, you will always have September. You know, the Jets running off to a 3-2 record.
Right.
Having that battle with the Patriots in the Meadowlands for supremacy, early supremacy of the AFC East, you'll always have that. But they seem to have reverted to the mean, as they say, 3-5 at the moment.
What's going on with the Cowboys?
Oh, right. Always something with the Cowboys. I mean, the latest last night was the judge rejected the injunction preventing the suspension of Ezekiel Elliott. So that means the Elliott suspension is on. I believe it's 6 games. Cowboys currently sit at 4-3. Tough time to lose, a big offensive weapon like that. And we'll see. I mean, I don't think anyone's really shocked that the Cowboys are having a little bit of a recalibration after what was definitely an ahead of schedule, spectacular year last year, finishing 12-4. The good news for them, I think the wild card situation in the NFC is pretty wide open, but they're going to have to get their act together because it doesn't look like they're in any mood to catch Philadelphia.
Mm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal sports writer Jason Gay. His piece is called A Saints versus Chiefs Super Bowl and Other Dubious Midseason Ideas. So with regards to the Saints and the Chiefs, you feel that those two are kind of the easiest arguments at this point to make for the Super Bowl?
I mean, do I want to bet my mortgage on it, Gordon? I don't know about that, but I'm trying to underline what to me is, again, sort of a very hard-to-predict season. I mean, I was sort of saying, okay, well, New England, if they get home field advantage, that's sort of boring, right? Everyone's kind of sick of seeing the Patriots having the home field advantage and going to the AFC Championship and locking it down there, right? So let's spice things up. Let's see. Kansas City right now, 6-2, tie with the Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers at the top of the AFC. Let's see how it goes from there. The Chiefs would have a tremendous home field advantage if they went to Arrowhead in January. And the NFC feels super wide open to me. I mean, I know the Eagles have the best record right now, but I like a veteran quarterback, you know, and I like Drew Brees, and this is a guy who has new weapons. They have a very improved defense down there in New Orleans, and though they've had some close games, I like a team like that deep in the season.
Although your bold call for a Bob Dylan three-hour halftime performance was rejected, do you like Justin Timberlake?
I mean, I'm okay with Justin Timberlake. I mean, I'm not, like, saying I was standing outside NFL headquarters with a Justin Timberlake NSYNC t-shirt on. I would like there to be some sort of penance paid to Janet Jackson, who we cannot forget was sort of part of the reason Justin Timberlake was not allowed to return to the NFL Super Bowl halftime experience. Gordon, I don't think it's cool to just invite JT back and not invite Janet back, so I'd like to see that cameo happen. I don't know about you.
Tremendous suspense. It would be tremendous suspense right up to the performance.
I mean, in all seriousness, to me, like, the NFL's, like, sort of, like, caution on these topics is so absurd. And, like, you have the opportunity for this tremendous moment. Now, Janet, in fairness to her, could tell them to stick it and just forget about it, right? And I don't blame her if she said that. But if it did happen, it would be a tremendous moment.
Thanks, Jason. Wall Street Journal sports writer Jason Gay. 22 minutes now after the hour on this weekend. Glad you're with us. You know your smartphone can spy on you even if you don't want to believe it. Here are the ways and what to do about it if you don't like it. From this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
If your app wants permission to access your camera and you click to allow, can your phone spy on you? It's something you might be worried about. Here with some answers, Eric Cole, CEO, Secure Anchor Consulting. Eric, with all this new stuff in our phones, what do you say about phones spying on us?
The answer is absolutely. And what always amazes me is if you ask people if they're willing to have a tracking device implanted in them, most people say, no way, that's Big Brother. But what they don't realize is they already do, and it's called your cell phone. Most cell phones by default have public tracking turned on, so I can go in and not only see where you are right now, but what most people don't realize is it keeps a history, so I can actually go in and see where you've been for the last 2 or 3 weeks. So three things. One, if I was in close vicinity to you, I would be able to just pick up your signal and be able to track you. Two, if I knew your phone number, I could look you up on websites to see where you are. And then third, if I got access to your phone, then pretty much game over, and I can see where you've been and what you've done for the last month.
The website that could track my cell phone number, is that something I probably unknowingly gave somebody access to?
Correct, because what people don't realize is they love their apps. And they go in, and I don't know about you. I'm actually very cautious. I only have a few, but if you have like 5 or 6 pages of apps, a lot of these apps that you download, people do not realize is they turn on your camera, they access your pictures, they access your location. So the next time you go in and download an app, pay careful attention, because you know all those messages pop up saying it wants to access, and most people are like, yes, 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 and they don't realize is they can turn on the camera to monitor you, they can turn on the microphone, they can track your location, and it gets real scary because people are in essence giving the authorization without even realizing it.
Once you've downloaded and given permission, can you reverse it?
Yes, you can absolutely do two things. One, you can uninstall the app, Or two, and this is something I recommend everyone do, is just go under settings, and for each of the apps, look at what they're accessing and ask yourself why. So if you downloaded this cool game, ask yourself, why is it accessing my camera? Why is it accessing my pictures? Because that should right away raise questions in your mind of why is it doing this and what could be the negative impact to me.
So are we giving our privacy away without knowing it?
So in a lot of cases, when you download apps and you use different programs, you probably vaguely remember that there's a screen that pops up with very tiny lettering and you hit I agree. And what most people don't realize is that's a user license agreement, and they're basically giving permission to these apps. So unfortunately, in a lot of cases, we view it as an invasion of privacy or a violation of our privacy. But unfortunately, legally, because we allow them to do that, then there's not really a strong case we can make. And they can do many things. So one thing is they can post it out to the internet. Depending on who you are, they can sell it to the media. A new trend that we're seeing recently is they can also use it for blackmail. And we see this as a big problem.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Dr. Eric Cole, CEO of Secure Anchor Consulting, a cybersecurity firm based in Washington, D.C. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Glad you could spend some time with us. First full weekend of November. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up this half hour, potential hike in national park fees. We'll explain what that could mean for us. Also, what's being called the pop diva identity crisis. Where on the charts are the likes of Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, Miley Cyrus? And a heartwarming wedding story from Pennsylvania. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. The New York City Marathon is Sunday. How does a celebrity chef prepare when it comes to food and hydration? We're joined now by Richard Blaze, who you may know for winning Top Chef All-Stars on Bravo. He's running on behalf of the global education organization Room to Read. The group has a campaign called Active for Education. Richard, first off, explain that.
So I'm running for Room to Read, which is an organization that promotes literacy, specifically for girls throughout the world in over 14 countries. I have two young daughters myself, so I'm really just sort of helping kids who may not have received a great sort of lottery of life ticket to sort of help them get books and resources, teachers and libraries. It's kind of amazing that, you know, 750 million people are illiterate in the world, and two-thirds of them our girls. So it means a lot to me because I have young daughters, of course.
How about that? Very good. So your marathon story is one that's kind of interesting. I know this is, I believe you said your fifth one coming up, but you use this as inspiration these days because you were heavy at one time?
So this will be my fifth New York City marathon, which is hard to believe, you know, but I was 60 to 80 pounds heavier, you know, 8 to 10 years ago. So the thought of being able to run 26, you know, 0.2 miles in one go is something that is kind of amazing. But, you know, as a chef, you know, I eat all day long, and my job is to taste food and taste other people's food on television now. So sort of having this fitness component has been crucial to me for just living a happy life, to be honest.
So back up a few years then, how did you get to be 60 to 80 overweight?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the lifestyle of a sort of traditional chef, you know, you work all day long, you're tasting, you're eating, you're doing wine pairings, whatever it is, and
wow.
Then, you know, you decompress at, you know, 2 a.m. when you're done with work, and you have a whole pizza and maybe a couple glasses of wine, and you do that 3 months in a row, and it can put you in a pretty dangerous spot. So luckily for me, I met my wife, who was a personal trainer. Now she's a yoga instructor, and she sort of helped me sort of kickstart this fitness regimen over the last couple years, and to the point where we ran our first race together at 10K, and at the end of that 10K, I proposed to her. A shout out to my wife, Jasmine, who sort of helped kickstart my fitness plan here.
So what was the aha moment? Did you have one?
I mean, for me, it was, I played sports in high school, and I was pretty active and athletic, for years and years and years. And I just remember, one day, like, just waking up on a Saturday morning before heading into the restaurant and like, oh, I'm going to throw some shorts on. It's a beautiful day. I'm going to go for a run. And I just remember, not even running more than, two blocks and being exhausted and winded. And, I realized, like, wow, just spinning around in circles in a restaurant all day long is not enough activity. So I guess that was one of those sort of aha moments for sure.
Well, we're speaking with celebrity chef Richard Blaze, talking about the New York City Marathon, which he is running. So how long beforehand, before the race, do you start prepping your, fluid and food intake?
Sure. So, I mean, of course you want to train, 3 to 4 months ahead for the actual race. That never quite works out for me because I'm so busy and I travel all over the place. I just try and squeeze in miles and fitness wherever I can on the road. As far as nutrition and fitness, again, you want to be a couple months out, but a few weeks out, I really start focusing on, hydration and fluid and, pre-race nutrition, and even sort of planning out the nutrition for the race, which is a lot of things that people might not think about, but you're losing thousands and thousands of calories during the race.
Yeah.
So having a hydration plan and a nutrition plan for the race is important. Beet juice has been oddly something over the last couple races that I've sort of taken to, and I think it's got a lot of restorative sort of properties. It's good for your blood and gives you lots of sort of endurance energy.
So at what day during the week, though, do you say, okay, it's time to start locking in all that hydration, or are you consistent, say, oh, I don't know, over the course of a year leading up to a marathon, that you're always well properly hydrated?
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was a course of a year. I would say probably, 60 days out, you're thinking about it. 30 days out, you're starting to really implement it. And that definitely within the last 2 weeks, as far as the nutrition and hydration, I'm really, monitoring, all of that pretty extensively.
Thanks, Richard. Richard Blaze, the celebrity chef from Top Chef All-Stars on Bravo, again, running for the group Room to Read. You can learn more about the organization at roomtoread.org. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. The National Park Service would like to do more than double the entrance fees at 17 popular national parks, including Grand Canyon, Yosemite, and Yellowstone, to help pay for infrastructure repairs and improvements. What exactly does that mean for our wallets and our experience? We're joined now by Jeff Ault, outdoor adventure and hiking expert. He's also written a book about his hike of the Appalachian Trail. It's called A Walk for Sunshine. Jeff, what was your reaction to this announcement?
Shocking, really. I mean, triple the fees based on what you currently pay per car when you enter a park. And then I started to wonder what, some people might think and how it will impact people going into the parks.
All right. So it's been said that the money, what is it, like $70 million they hope to raise is for infrastructure improvements. Given your experience, is it needed?
Oh, by all means, yeah. I mean, our parks are our national treasures, and there's a $12 billion maintenance backlog. And, we need to maintain these parks, and their budgets have been severely, slashed, so that builds up over time. And just like the roads in any community, you need to do maintenance and repair, so it's definitely needed.
All right, so if this is suddenly an impact to your family budget and perhaps a national park is out of reach, what do you do? I mean, do you have free alternatives, for example, that would be a nice plan B?
Yeah, well, first, it's not set in stone. It's open for public comments. And so I encourage everybody, get on the parkplanning.mps.gov website and tell them what you think, because there are a lot of free options even if this happens. So, for example, every family that has a fourth grader, you can get a national park annual pass that'll get you into all the national parks. Or if you're active U.S. military, you can get into the parks along with your spouse and family. And then there's a free access pass for people with disabilities. And these are always in place. So, but the, you know, if this increase did go into effect, what they're saying is they would charge $70 per vehicle, but you can still buy an annual national park pass for $80. So if you're going to go to a park more than just once, it pays to buy the national annual pass at $80 for a year.
We're speaking with Jeff Altz, outdoor adventure and hiking expert, also author of a book called A Walk for Sunshine, and we're talking about this potential increase in national park fees. In your experience, which national park might be in the greatest need of repair?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, there's over 417 national park sites and 59 actual national parks. They all have a backlog of issues. So of all those parks, 118 currently charge a fee. And then the 17 most popular national parks are the ones that they've earmarked for repair and maintenance issues to jack this fee up. And because of the big backlog and because these 17 parks are the most popular.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Altz, outdoor adventure and hiking expert. He's got a book called A Walk for Sunshine. It's 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending time with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. There's a changing of the guard in the music world. Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shah says with the rise of hip-hop, a string of A-list pop stars like Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, Miley Cyrus, and Katy Perry have stumbled. Neil, what's going on?
Well, basically, for decades now, hip-hop has thrived and been dominant in American popular culture, and obviously it captured the imagination of America's youth a long time ago. The thing is, now, in recent years, and particularly this year, it's basically taking over the music industry, sales, chart positions, etc., often via streaming. In this rap-dominated landscape, what you're finding is pop stars, and especially female pop stars, are struggling to have huge hits, struggling to top the charts, struggling to put out music that people like. One factoid that jumps out is if you look at the different streaming services, Spotify, Apple Music, all of them, if you take a look at the 25 most streamed songs on all these services, you got a couple by male pop stars, but not one. Not one of the 25 is by a female pop star.
Wow.
And 20 of them are by hip-hop and R&B artists.
Interesting. So have the females necessarily lost their edge?
That is what some people think. I mean, we've had a long tradition of female pop divas. I'm thinking of, you know, I grew up in the 80s, so Madonna is a touchstone for me. And
sure,
the Madonna tradition carries through Lady Gaga and to folks like Miley Cyrus today. Mm-hmm. The question is whether that's just not... that tradition is losing some luster. Taylor Swift obviously is, she was a country star, but when she moved over into the pop realm, she, along with Miley Cyrus, and even bigger than Miley Cyrus, obviously, is a pop diva. One thing that's been interesting, Miss Swift is putting out an album November 10th, as I think everybody on the planet knows, named Reputation. She's had a struggle. Some of her songs that have come out have not done as well on the charts as prior albums, and some of her reviews by music critics have not been that great. The other, but in that case with Taylor Swift, I mean, her album's not out. Maybe it's not fair to judge.
Yeah.
Other examples is Katy Perry with her album Witness, Lady Gaga with her album last year, Joanne. A lot of these, Miley Cyrus, a lot of these artists have stumbled on various fronts.
Where does this go from here? Anybody take a guess at that, Neil?
I think this is a pretty special moment. I mean, one response I got from readers is some folks saying, look, hip-hop's been big for a long time. What's the big deal? I mean, hip-hop's always been big. And it's definitely been the case that hip-hop has had pop moments. I don't know what to call it, but like pop moments in the past. I mean, again, when I was growing up in the 80s, MC Hammer, for example, it was a big pop crossover moment. I think what's happening is not that hip-hop is temporarily crossing over into pop. I think the rules of pop are being kind of rewritten along the lines of hip-hop values.
Thanks, Neil. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Neil Shah. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. An 84-year-old Pennsylvania man named Wayne Wood has gotten married for a second time, and his 86-year-old brother became the unsuspecting best man. You see, the older brother, Gordon Wood, couldn't make his little brother's first wedding because he was serving in the Korean War. So he told the Bucks County Courier-Times he'd been hoping for a while that Wayne would marry the woman he's been dating for about 2.5 years now. The couple-to-be live in Lake Placid, Florida, but they devised a ruse to marry in Pennsylvania while visiting the elder Wood and his wife so he could come to their wedding. With the help of local court clerks, the ceremony was scheduled for September. Then Hurricane Irma hit, and the Florida couple were forced to stay home and deal with the aftermath. But the pair finally arrived for their visit to Pennsylvania last week. On Monday, the bride-to-be said she needed to pick up something at the Bucks County Courthouse. Then Wayne Wood stunned his older brother by asking him to stand by his side for an on-the-spot wedding. Good story. A couple of guys in their 80s, right? That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.